Hello, everybody. I am Mayor Watt. That's ohmtown.com. I'm the mayor of Ohmtown. Go over to ohmtown.com after the show, or before, or during, or whatever you want to do. What is Ohmtown? Ohmtown is a news aggregation site that grabs a bunch of news from around the internets, funnels it into six main categories and 50 channels underneath that. So what are the six main categories? Create is about everything creator. News is just general news. Education is educational type of topics. And entertainment is some mostly drinking right now, but I'm looking for an interesting food-related set of news feeds. Social is obviously societal in nature. And then technology, which is my major area of interest, is technology. So that's where the most shows are. But across the board, there's about 50 of them that are active, into which news is aggregated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I use the site in my daily life because it filters a broad gamut of news into these six categories, and I'm interested in everything within it. If you have questions or comments, come on over to twitch.tv/ohmtown or go over to youtube.com/ohmtown. It'll pull up Ohmtown over there. And I'm also on Twitter, and the podcast obviously also exists. So you can go over to wherever you get your podcasts. I should be there now. So just do a search for Ohmtown and you'll find me. Well, you'll find Ohmtown. Not necessarily me. I'm always looking for somebody to host or co-host. I'm not very aggressive in it. I'm not out there really hyping it up. I'm letting things kind of organically move. I don't know what the next 6 months are going to hold, but I'm almost halfway through the year. And I'd like to get that goal up to 100%. That would be awesome. I know that time for the show has been bouncing around. Unfortunately, I've got 1,000 bosses that pull me away in different directions, but starting tomorrow, I will be back at 1 o'clock. You know what? Strike that. I'm going to stick to the 11 o'clock time frame, and it's right at the beginning of, maybe a lunch anywhere. I don't know. I really don't know. 11 o'clock seems like a good time, so let's just stick to that. And we'll do 11 o'clock, starting tomorrow, and I'll be there. Okay. But whatever else is going on, let's get into today's news. About 20 articles again. This one I actually saw at the, Sony State of Play, and, thought it was interesting. So you basically are a cat in a cyberpunk simulator. And it's going to come out in July. So it's called Stray. It's in the Word in Tech, probably because of the source from The Verge. The last time we saw Stray, the open world cyberpunk game where you play as a cat, it had been delayed, but now we have a new release date, July 19th. It was originally slated to launch in early 22. It'll be coming to PS4, PS5, as well as PC. And according to the article, if you're not sure what all the fuss is about, there's a brand new trailer above showing all of the futuristic feline action. This was actually announced during the Sony State of Play. Let's click the link. Takes us over to The Verge. Andrew Webster is the one that's reporting. Go and check out the video. It'll give you an interesting perspective of what this is. I would probably never play this. But I thought it was interesting because it is, yeah, it's basically Goat Simulator, but in a cyberpunk world with a cat. So, and much higher resolution, and I'm not sure about all of the ins and outs of it yet. So, I'll probably end up watching somebody stream this, and I'll probably never play it. Not even a probably, I won't ever play this. But I thought it was interesting to bring to your attention. So go check it out. And let's get into the next article, which is Apple proposes more flexible work schedules. Oh, you know what? I started out right away without posting the URL to chat. My goodness. Okay, so there's one. Here's the other for the Apple article. Apple proposes more flexible work schedules amid unionization efforts. Apple is retooling work schedules to provide more flexibility for retail employees in an attempt to get ahead of the unionization efforts. It's something that I've been talking about for several weeks now, in that gone are the days, I think, where it seemed reasonable to demand people show up to an office to do work. There's a lot of context that's necessary. I had somebody already razz me about using context is key a lot in my stream, in my podcast, in the YouTube channel. It's context is king. You really do have to make sure that you understand the context of what somebody is arguing about. Otherwise, it's just a snap judgment. And we're all guilty of it at times, you know, myself included. We think we have all of the information, but we really don't. And so we end up making a judgment call without all of the information. This article is over at appleinsider.com by Amber Neely. And let's see. Apple is retooling work schedules to provide more flexibility for retail employees in an attempt to get ahead of unionization efforts. In a retail environment, you have to have people present. So without a doubt, retail environments require people in stores. We're not quite at the point where we can have people just willy-nilly walking around in a store without any human interaction and billing people and whatnot. Sometimes you can get away with it, but it's not standard practice, not just yet. But office work, nobody needs to show up into an office. Although I've heard a couple of people argue against it because it's hard to foment a particular culture within the enterprise, but really, corporate culture is a double-edged sword, depending on what that culture is. And a lot of it flies under the radar, but, you know, if you're not stuck in a silo, an echo chamber of bad actors, then you don't have a culture that can be led astray by a few bad apples spoiling the bunch, so to speak. Anyway, minimum of 12-hour in-between shifts, an increase from the current minimum of 10 hours, maximum of 3 days per week when employees can work past 8 unless they choose to work late shifts. It's usually frowned upon when you say no. That's kind of a hard one to really apply. Employees won't be scheduled to work more than 5 days in a row, a change from a maximum of 6 days in a row. There could be exemptions during new product launches and holidays. Full-time employees will be eligible for a dedicated weekend day off for each six-month period. Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. Anyway, and they're also bumping up the pay, so to $22 an hour. At least they're beginning to notify some people. Let's continue on to the next article, which is in the Hatch Ideas channel. It was aggregated from CNBC. Elon Musk feels, quote-unquote, super bad about the economy. Needs to cut 10% of Tesla jobs. Yep, you heard it, folks. The business needs to cut 10%. This is an article. It just has the author of Reuters. It doesn't have a name. So let me see if I can. No name. Anyway, the key points from the article is that Tesla CEO Elon Musk has a super bad feeling about the economy and needs to cut about 10% of the jobs at electric car maker Tesla. He said in an email to executives seen by Reuters. Tesla employed almost 100,000 people at the company and its subsidiaries at the end of 2021, according to the annual SEC filing, and the company is not immediately available for comment. Musk has warned in recent weeks about the risk of recession, but his email ordering a hiring freeze and staff cuts was the most direct and high-profile message of its kind from the head of an automaker. Yeah. I guess, well, again, you don't become a billionaire by taking smaller margins and whatnot. So Tesla CEO Elon Musk has a super bad feeling and is going to be cutting about 10%. So 10,000 people. Congratulations. You're fired. Tesla shares fell nearly 3% in U.S. pre-market trade on Friday, and its Frankfurt-listed stock was down 3.6% after the Reuters report. U.S. NASDAQ futures turned negative and were trading 0.6% lower. I said lawyer. if that was a slip. Anyway, it says here, but Tesla has struggled to restart production at its Shanghai factory after COVID-19 lockdowns forced costly outages at the plant. Yep. Pause all hiring. Tesla had, okay, before Musk's warning, Tesla had about 5,000 job postings on LinkedIn from sales in Tokyo and engineers in its new Berlin Gigafactory to deep learning scientists in Palo Alto. It had scheduled an online hiring event for Shanghai in June 9th on its WeChat channel. Maybe it's only going to be here in the States. I don't know. Pardon the cough there. The next article, let's continue on to the next article. This one kind of, you know what? I didn't post that article either. My gosh. Come on, Marwat. You're falling behind. This next article is about greedflation. Is greedflation, quote unquote, greedflation? It's from the New York Times, mind you. Rewriting economics, or do old rules still apply? Economists and politicians are debating whether monopolistic companies are fueling inflation in ways that confound longstanding theory. This has been aggregated into the Mobble channel, but let's go to the source. Again, it's New York Times. And the article is by Lydia DePillis. And it says, since prices started to escalate a year ago, politicians and economists have seized on inflation to tell the preferred story about what went wrong and what policies would bring it back into line. Some say it's very straightforward, supply and demand, economics 101. I just don't see it that way. There's simply a lot of cash out there, said Joe Brusilis. Now, who has any understanding of that? You know, the common Joe has zero understanding that there is a ton of money in the system. But suppliers do. The people that are getting the raw materials, the people that are pulling oil out of the ground, the people that are pulling, lithium from the ground and supplying it, they all know. Why? Because they're at that fundamental level of understanding. When they're supplying the material, it's in vast quantities, or it's constrained because there's a monopolistic tendency to raise the price when you're the only one that can supply it, even though it's really a political thing, not really a means thing. Anybody can pull stuff from the ground or even pump oil from the ground. It really just takes, the technology. But when you have a handle on all of it, then you're the one that's in control of it. And you see, because you know what is going on at that macro level, then you know. And so if you think that there are a lot of people that are involved in this. It's not like just one or two people, but they see that there's a lot of money that's been injected into the system. They see data that says, well, there's a whole bunch in savings and you can't have that. Let's start pumping the cash out of those bank accounts by raising all of our prices. And here we are, greedflation. So this person, Joe Brusilis, chief economist for the accounting firm RSM US, referring to the several trillion dollars in pandemic stimulus that filtered into the economy since 2020, pardon me. Yep, the competition for those goods is up, and that's sending prices up. Whether we're talking about getting a Nissan Sentra or a seat on an American Airlines flight, why is that? Why did suddenly, you know, don't tell me it's because the pandemic is ending and doors are opening. No, these same companies that I'm talking about that are the suppliers of the they are the means for consumption. They had record profits for the last 2 years. During the pandemic, they had record profits. While the cost of goods is increasing, record profits. Right? While we're trending towards recession, record profits. You can't tell me that this is aligned with old world economic machinations. It's not how it works. It's never worked like this. But when you have very few people supplying, then yes, you can start ramping up the costs. Why? Because there isn't any competition. You know, I can't get it from just anybody, whatever it might be. I can't just get my food from anybody. I can't just get my gas from anybody. The number of people that are in a particular business and have the means to get it out to people, I proffer up as there are fewer people that are providing goods and services. Now, services are largely easy, you know, particularly things like business consulting and whatnot. It ends up being who you know, not what you know. So it says here, the White House and progressive organizations, however, say, wait a minute, this time it's different. In a time of extraordinary disruption, they contend increasingly dominant corporations are taking the opportunity to jack up prices more than they otherwise could, which is squeezing consumers and supercharging inflation, or greedflation, as the hypothesis has come to be known. The argument comports with the Biden administration's focus on the ills of economic concentration. Congressional Democrats have run with the idea, introducing bills that would impose a temporary excess profits tax on companies that charge prices they deem unreasonably high, or simply ban those high prices altogether. Critics, including the nation's largest business lobby, deride the efforts as based on a conspiracy theory and a flimsy argument. Yeah. I'm sure. And cigarettes used to be good for you. So the next article is in the Smack Talk channel. EU about to finalize law that would require Apple to use USB-C on iPhones. Go for it, EU. Get rid of the Lightning connector. Get rid of all of the connectors except for USB-C. And then in time, we'll have another standardized power and data transfer system. Maybe, I don't know, USB-D. I don't know what it'll end up being, but there's already stuff that's, you know, in development. IEEE is, and they're doing research and whatnot. A lot of people are looking into it. I'm sure something from Intel working with Apple will be released in the future that trumps even USB-C, FireWire, Lightning, etc. It's all pretty much the same with little tweaks when you pay for proprietary deployments. Europe's ongoing debate and litigation over making USB-C the required standard charging port for all smartphones can be finalized on June 7th, 2022. The EU has already been reported to be nearing an agreement following its proposals evolving for more than a decade. Now the final decision may be as soon as June 6th. Let's go to the source of this, Apple Insider, and William Gallagher is the author. EU about to finalize law that would require Apple to use USB-C on iPhones. I have zero problem with this. I think it should have already been deployed, but I guess when you've probably got, I don't know, maybe tens of millions of Lightning connectors, you still want to keep on using that connector until it's no longer in high inventory. I'm really not sure. Just take it all apart and melt it down. If mandated, the law would replace the existing micro USB mandate. It's not clear what would happen if the future version of USB-C, or sorry, if USB replaces the USB-C connector with another form factor. You know, they'll move on to something else. Honestly, I'm not sure why a government would involve itself in this. Particularly, you know, micro USB was a horrible solution. I mean, it was not a very robust solution. They were always getting damaged. Every cable that I ever got was always flimsy. I don't know what it was about micro USB, but anyway, let's just move on. Let's move past this. The next article is in the Daily News Show channel. It was aggregated from commondreams.org. It says, corporate monopolies who stole the baby's formula. So four corporations control 90% of the baby formula market in the United States. Oh, by the way, I had mentioned that I think that people should create an open source baby formula and should be produced by a whole strata of manufacturers, small-time business owners who in their particular region can make baby formula. But the problem here is it has to go through regulatory review. You have to get monitored again and again and again constantly, because there's so much that's riding on this. The liability for somebody is like through the roof, right? So when you start doing a search into what is in baby formula, sure, you can find out a bunch of stuff, right? But all of it is built on the idea of do not produce your own baby formula. Do not water it down. Do not do this. Do not do that. It can cause great harm, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what really causes great harm? Not having baby formula, because 90% of it is controlled by four corporations, one of which shuts down one of their plants that takes out 25% of all baby formula. So how did this come to be? Goes back to what I was talking about, mergers and acquisitions, the consolidation of wealth and control and influence. I, way back in the way back machine, had started up a competitor in, well, let's just say it was finance. And every time I tried to grow this business in any way, shape, or form, there was new regulation, new policy, new procedure. And I was a one-person operation, as I am now. Can't keep up with that kind of crap. But I'm really good at going from idea to deployment. That's kind of my specialty. But what I couldn't contend with is that when you have money, you also have political power, influence, control. You can write policy if you have billions of dollars in market capitalization. And that's what this is all about. There's so much money behind this that trying to create and then get certified to produce baby formula is economically unviable. It's an untenable position for a small business. If you are doing it and you are producing it and it hasn't been reviewed, your liability is through the roof if a baby gets sick. So you really shouldn't be doing it, plain and simple. But the problem is, when you don't have any infant formula, not toddler, because you can't use toddler with infant, okay? The nutritional profile has been split off. So, you know, a banana isn't always a banana. To an infant, you have to have a different profile of nutrients than a toddler. So that first year, if you are trying to get your baby formula right now and it's not on the shelf, you're kind of screwed. And that there is the problem. So I think that it's incumbent. This is the time when government does need to step in and say, okay, well, it's a recipe. So publish the recipe. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Publish the recipe. Why? Because this is harming all of society, you know, in the United States, because this didn't happen elsewhere. Okay. But it happened in the United States. So publish the formula so that people can make, using the requisite nutritional profile, infant formula for their kids. So this doesn't happen anymore. Allow me to get all of the materials that is necessary for me to have infant formula. But they won't do it. Nobody will do it. Why? Because it will siphon money directly out of the political strata. It'll go back to the people, and you'll end up with a market that basically collapses, because you no longer have to have four corporations controlling 90% of the baby formula market. Maybe the prices would drop dramatically. Would there be increased risk? Not necessarily. You know, we do all kinds of things that could be corporatized, but you know, you grow plants at home that you can eat all the time. We're adult though, but you know, we follow procedure and we sterilize stuff. I mean, we make beer all the time. In some states, you can distill under certain controls and it's monitored. So let us do the same thing. Anyway, this article is over at Common Dreams, the corporate monopolies who stole the baby's formula. And its subtitle is four corporations control 90% of the baby formula market in the United States. It's an article by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan. And it says, last October, a whistleblower sent the FDA a report detailing safety and sanitation violations at the Abbott Nutrition Factory in Sturgis, Michigan, the largest baby formula manufacturing plant in the nation. It would be months before the FDA took action. Abbott fired the whistleblower. Four babies who had consumed formula from the plant suffered bacterial infections, and two of them died. The FDA could not conclusively link the illnesses or deaths to the plant. In February, Abbott shut down that plant and announced a voluntary recall of its Sturgis manufactured baby formula. The FDA followed with a product warning, and the life-threatening formula shortage was not due to a natural disaster or circumstances beyond Abbott's control. Rather, it is a predictable outcome of corporate greed, a cover-up, and captured regulatory agency. That's all from the article. So if you want to read more about it, you're already getting my perspective on this. I think that more people should be able to produce their own at-home infant formula following a profile that is set out by those with an interest and subject matter expertise in infant formula. So let's do this. Who is willing to publish an infant formula that is the profile that's needed and take control of this, of the basic consumable for infants? You know, if you can't breastfeed, you have to have infant formula, and many, 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 many people cannot breastfeed. So they have to have infant formula, and they're not in control of that supply. In every other case, I can provide. You know, if there's a shortage somewhere, I can provide. You know, clothes, fine. I can get raw material. I can go and get fabric and make baby clothes for my infant or my toddler. No problem there, right? Me, as an adult male, I can do that. What I can't do is make infant formula, because I don't have the profile that will keep me out of jail if my infant gets sick. So, you know, historically we have given food of whatever. Historically, I'd have to go back and look what we did, you know, back in the 1800s, 1700s. But there were a lot more fatalities. You know, the mortality rate of humans has grown, has changed. It's gotten better, not grown as in higher, but And it's because of oversight. It's because of policy and procedure from usually government oversight. Because businesses will do what this business did. Not tell anybody. Not be forthcoming. Not anything. Because it'll hurt the bottom line and stakeholders and investors. Or they'll say, oh, well, it's not from us. Right. Just like, again, like I said about the other things, people with a vested interest in the success of a particular product will say whatever they have to make sure that it is a viable solution for generating revenue. Cigarettes used to be healthy. I mean, doctors used to say that it was okay to smoke cigarettes. There were pans that were made that had a nonstick coating that led directly to people dying. And it was a denial, denial, denial. And there's movies about it, for crying out loud. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Okay, I'm going to continue on. The next article is in the Mobile Channel. Did I not throw that article in there too? Corporate monopolies? Oh my God. I'm just not doing this right. And of course, people are trying to get in touch with me again. I'd like to be more available for y'all, but that is a massive shift to stream more, and I would like to, but I'm going to start doing it tomorrow. I promise I'll be more online. Okay, so this NOAA article is in the Mobile Channel. NOAA shares flashy first imagery of the GOES, or GOES-18 Lightning Mapper, the Geostationary Lightning Mapper, or GLM instrument, on board NOAA's GOES-18 satellite. I think that, is now providing striking lightning observations of the Western Hemisphere. The GOES-18 launched on March 1st, 2022. I had a hot S there. Let's click the link. It takes us over to fizz.org. And recently, the GOES-18 GLM detected and monitored lightning activity in severe storms across the U.S. The Derecho moved through the northern plains on May 12th, particularly affecting eastern South Dakota and west central Minnesota. Derechos. Feature. I don't know why I have to say derecho like that, derecho. Feature unusually widespread wind damage, and according to NOAA's National Weather Service, the May 12th event was one of the most extreme examples on record due to the number of significant wind gusts. This derecho, produced straight-line winds between 60 and 100 miles per hour. Several tornadoes were also confirmed in the area, as well as significant blowing dust. The storm uprooted trees, damaged property, caused power outages, and resulted in injuries at least two deaths. My main, let me see if I can pull something up real quick. I think it's called Mudbot. Yeah. So I have no relation to these people, but I went looking because I want my next house to be a 3D printed house, made from either directly from the soil at the location or whatever is necessary for me to have a particular mill. And I want to build a house that is 3D printed. And so they have them. It's a US centric company called Mudbots. And I think that this would solve so many problems in terms of housing stability in areas that are tornado prone, high wind prone, even the weather pattern that dumps a ton of snow on a house. These massive shifts can cause some serious problems with standard timber framed houses, because they, much to everyone's chagrin, wood soaks up water, gets near freezing, but it swells and contracts, and that can pull nails out of it, that can pull itself off of mounting brackets, It can twist and contort, and eventually it just collapses. And like without active monitoring, you run the risk of basically your house falling down around you. That's why when you're a homeowner, you basically walk the perimeter of your house like you are out on combat patrol, and you're looking for every single weakness, and then you're patching things. You're filling in cracks, you're repainting the house, like I have to pull up my driveway because when the builder plopped down the thing, the driveway, they didn't compact it properly, at least in my estimation. And I have my driveway is sinking. So right now when I drive my car onto it, I risk scratching the bottom of my car. Very disconcerting. And so within the next month, I'm going to have my driveway replaced. But if everything is done properly and you use something like concrete, cement, and a 3D printer, you can print, 1 foot thick walls that are one contiguous piece, unlike sheets of drywall and wood framing and nails and brackets and whatnot. And all of that stuff is designed to fail. It really is. It's designed for easy deployment, but that was hundreds of years worth of evolution to where we are now. And we're not far from building a house out of twigs. That's really what it all is. Well, something that is pretty darn impervious to weathering is concrete, a rock. It is a rock. And it takes a lot longer to decompose. But there are caveats and there are concerns. I'm not a big fan of rebar being stuck inside cement. The physics there say, well, you got to put all of this in there for reinforcement and anchoring and whatnot. Well, unless it's a particular type of rebar, it rusts. And the type that doesn't rust is very expensive compared to standard rebar. And, I've seen it. The wrong deployment of rebar, if the people aren't very careful about how it's deployed, and if water gets in there, it'll start rusting, and it actually acts like a nail and will slowly separate. It'll oxidize and break, spalling, the cement. So what does all of this have to do with the lightning mapper? It's because the lightning mapper is notifying people of basically, changes in the weather. And so this climate change is leading to greater instability to the point where you have to have a more robust living space, something that can survive 100 mile an hour winds instead of what happens now, where the wind just sucks the roof off of the building and then it just falls over. So go over to fizz.org. The article is by the NOAA headquarters, not a particular name. And if you want to see more of this information, they have a YouTube video out, but you can go over to fizz.org and actually watch the video of these lightning strikes that are being monitored. And there's certain reasons for it, but to me, it's all about climate change monitoring. Let's go on to the next article. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. A wave of layoffs is sweeping the U.S. Here are firms that have announced cuts so far, from Carvana to Netflix. I'm going to just click the link. I'm falling behind. And this is over at Business Insider. Article is written by Ben Gilbert and Avery Hartmans. And it says, in the first few months of 2022, a wave of layoffs swept across American business. The cuts stem from slower business growth, paired with rising labor costs. Layoffs cut across industries from mortgage lending to digital payment processing. Let's see some of them. Carvana laid off 2,500 people. I think that No, that wasn't the one. There was one that was, it was all done by Zoom. Horrible. Reef laid off about 750 people. GoPuff, which I've never even heard of, 400 people were laid off. That's not much. Better laid off about 4,000 people. Oh, I think it was, yeah, it was Better. Yeah. Just horrible, horrible optics. And some of them actually received like congratulations for being hired, I think later on. I thought that was really funny. But 4,000 people getting laid off by basically saying, if you're on the Zoom call, congratulations, you're invited not to return, was basically what it is. Lost $100 million last quarter. Better.com, which he said was his mistake. He then said the layoff shouldn't have happened right before the holiday, but 3 months ago. So he waited until the holiday, even though he says it was his mistake. Maybe he shouldn't be the CEO if that's the mistake. So let's see. Hold on a second. I'm curious about something. I know it's it's dead air, I know, but let me just pull something up. So after this year, which Garg, right? Yeah, Vishal Garg, I guess his last name is pronounced Garg, received a $25 million cash bonus in 2020 after previously requesting an equity-based award. So this is a year after in which Greg received a $25 million cash bonus. So how much did he actually make? The Daily News Catcher has Garg's net worth estimated at around $4 billion, while the Better company itself is estimated to be worth around $7.7 billion. And in November of 2020, Garg reportedly invested $10 million in AlphaFlow, a platform for investing in real estate debt. Gotcha. So he laid off 4,000 people. See, for me, I would end up having to take, because I want to keep my enterprise operational, but you don't become a billionaire by using your own money. You use other people's money to run your business, and you siphon money out of it. I've seen a lot of billionaires do that. A lot of millionaires, multimillionaires do that. They pay themselves first. That's even a mantra, you know, that pay yourself first, pay yourself first. And I largely agree. But the problem is that if you have an enterprise and you see that the problem is your fault, even admits to it, I think that you should inject your personal capital into it, and save your company from your own mistakes, your own decisions. If that's, I mean, that's what it says in the article. He said that it was his fault. Maybe the whole thing wasn't his fault. Maybe he should have told people 3 months earlier, and that's what is his fault, the fact that he told people right before the holiday. Needless to say, I'm not a billionaire, so maybe my particular ethic is I would do it a different way. Noom fired 400 or 500 people. Peloton, over 2,800 people, including 20% of its corporate workforce, because an ongoing downturn in the company's business, I think it reached saturation. But that's me. And now it's going to be churning people, I think. But their filings and their machinations are really what it's all about. With gyms reopening as vaccination rates increased, Peloton's business took a huge hit. The company's market value has dropped from $50 billion last year to around $4.4 billion as of early June 2022. I bought a Tonal because I don't want to go to a gym. And I don't think that a Peloton all by itself is my particular bag of tricks. I like weightlifting more than just the aerobic workout of a Peloton. Thrasio, I've never even heard of it. Up to 20% of staff, according to sources. Robinhood. Unknown number of people in mortgage lending, Wells Fargo. Wow, this is a really long list, folks. So go over to businessinsider.com and show them some attention. Ben Gilbert and Avery Hartman's article titled "A Wave of Layoffs is Sweeping the U.S. Here are firms that have announced cuts so far, from Carvana to Netflix." Let's go on to the next article. I have a lot more, and I've already been streaming for 45 minutes, I think. Oof. So let's continue on. I want to get all of this in. In the continuity report, Disney hires Apple Games exec Mark Bozen to head Metaverse creative strategy. So Disney hired Mark. So Todd Spangler is the writer for this article over at Variety. And they hired Mark Bozen as top gaming executive from Apple as a senior creative leader for its cross-divisional next-generation storytelling initiative, which encompasses Disney's Metaverse ambitions. And now I feel like everything is muddled together when it comes to Metaverse. Is the Metaverse the Facebook/Meta perspective of Metaverse, or, you know, or is it Disney's Metaverse, where it's basically a converged virtual reality, augmented reality, standard web 2.0, new web 3.0 Metaverse perspective in VR? I don't know what it is anymore. As Disney's VP of Next Generation Storytelling Creative Experiences, Bozen will be responsible for leading the creative vision for the group and turn the strategy into executable plans. He's expected to build a multidisciplinary team that will work with Disney businesses across gaming, film, TV, toys, parks, and more to deliver interconnected consumer experiences. Well, I think that Disney has another issue. If the video that I watched on Reddit goes viral, somebody is going to get some bad press, because basically some dude was trying to propose with via a stage with over in, I think, Disney Paris. They were just about to take a picture, and he was on his knee and holding the ring out, and everybody was like oohing and aahing, and some dude ran up, an employee from the park, I guess, and just ushered them off, grabbed the ring and said, no, screw you and your happiest place on earth proposal. You're out of here. And I was just blown away by that. I showed it to a couple of people, and they were like, if this guy's job is still in existence, there's something wrong here. And I hope that Disney makes good on this. They should make that stage sit there so that people can take pictures of proposals. But that's a different article, I suppose. We might run across it in the news feed in time. Let's go on to the next article. This next article is in the Smack Talk channel. Pardon me. Sorry about that. My voice is still going out. So this is in the Smack Talk channel. Apple highlights three young winners of the Swift Student Challenge. If you're into software engineering, programming, then you might dig this. I'm just going to click the link because I'm falling way, way, way behind. Mike Peterson over at Apple Insider wrote this article, and Apple highlighted these three. Let's see. I'm not sure if they go into each of the three because it's a video. But Apple has highlighted three of the 350 winners of the Swift Student Challenge who are using their coding abilities to solve problems in their communities. Three teens were all first-time participants in the Swift Student Challenge, which is a coding competition for young developers. Oh, young developers. Well, I guess I'm forever out. I guess I'm a young developer because I haven't been developing very long, but I'm not a young developer because old dude. Anyway, congratulations. And they have links to the Apple featured story regarding this, so go check it out. There is a worldwide developers conference taking place shortly. Should be the 6th. I think it is, right? So that's weird. Okay. Anyway, let's continue on. The next article is Cruise can finally start charging for fully driverless robo-taxis. This is, I think, the same vehicle that got pulled over by the police. The cops just looked at it like, oh, God, there's no driver. Who do I ticket? No, it was because it had a burnt out taillight or its lights weren't on or something like that. And they said that Cruise, I think it was, said that it was because human error on it in that car, not the person in the car, but a human error setting that car up, I guess. So this is the Word in Tech channel, and it was aggregated from The Verge. Self-driving company Cruise has received a permit from the California Public Utilities Commission to charge for fully driverless rides, a milestone that the company claims makes it the first and only company to operate a commercial driverless ride hail service in a major U.S. city. Cruise has been testing free driverless rides for the public in San Francisco since February, and now it will be able to offer paid fares. I don't understand why it was okay when it was free, but it suddenly wouldn't have been okay to charge, but now it's okay to charge. I guess if you get in a car accident and it was free, you get what you pay for. Maybe there's some subtlety in the code regarding this. Anyway, it's an article by Jay Peters over at The Verge. I think this is the company that had the car that got pulled over. I wonder if they talk about it. Let's see here. Yeah, I don't see anything talking about it. Anyway, for this paid service, the GM and Honda-backed Cruise will be able to operate in 30 all-electric vehicles at night from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. in select streets in San Francisco, and the vehicles won't be able to go faster than 30 miles per hour, according to the draft resolution. I suppose if it's entirely in the city, you're not going to be ripping down the streets any faster than that, at least legally. Cruise will also be able to offer the rides if weather conditions don't include heavy rain, heavy fog, heavy smoke, hail, sleet, or snow. How about heavy customers? Okay, let's continue on. I saw this in the State of Play as well from Sony yesterday, I think it was. Horizon Call of the Mountain gets a trailer. Horizon Forbidden West, free update is released. During the State of Play presentation, Sony showed a new trailer for the upcoming virtual reality title, Horizon Call of the Mountain. Basically, you're in VR mode doing the same thing that you did in Horizon Forbidden West or Horizon. But it's called Horizon Call of the Mountains, and you get really immersed into it. So from bow and arrow to climbing, you are in it at the VR perspective. So first person, really first person. So I thought it was really neat. I love the idea of it. Now I kind of wish that I had kept my VR gear, but I sold it a while back. Now I want it again, but I don't want wires, and I don't want the wireless offering from Meta. That is not going to happen. Sorry, Meta. Okay, so the next article is the Doctor Strange movie. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness hits Disney Plus on June 22nd, and this article describes how to watch it. This is a Business Insider article by Kevin Webb. You know, if you are a subscriber, if you are interested in movies across the Disney Plus platform, you almost don't have to buy any Disney movies. You'll have to suffer that all of your friends and family will be talking about the movies for months, and then you'll have to watch it later on and go, oh, that's what you were talking about. But you could always buy the movie, or go see it in a movie theater when it gets released, you know, but you can buy it when it gets released into, oh, that's right, Apple. So you're going to have to wait, but you never have to buy a Marvel movie because they all get posted over to Disney Plus. And some are always, they are only over on Disney Plus. Anyway, it's going to be coming to Disney Plus And it says here that it costs $8 a month or $80 a year, and members can stream the movie without paying any extra. That's true when it once it releases. And the movie is also expected to be available to buy or rent through VOD video on demand retailers on or around that date. And but for some reason, I end up buying all of the Marvel movies. And Top Gun is already in the list because I've already got it pre-ordered. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm just a consumer of movies, which is a really good idea for the show that I want to bring, the Continuity Report, which is supposed to talk about movies, but I'm only doing Hometown Daily News for now. So come and talk to me about it. Let's see if we can spin up the Continuity Report as an hourly, a once a week, hour long show or longer. It really depends on how much time people want to talk about a particular movie or genre of movies. But don't forget, go over to Business Insider if you want to read more about the Doctor Strange Disney Plus drop on June 22nd. The next article is in the Stock Marketeers channel. Fed only need to get rates up to 3% to cool inflation, large bank economists say. Well, my problem with that is it will convert into 11% inflation rate by that time. The Federal Reserve will only need to get its benchmark rate up to 1% to cool inflation, or 3% to cool inflation, according to the latest ABA survey of economists at large banks. Let's click the link. It'll take us over to marketwatch.com. They changed the URL. All right. That's awesome. Okay. Welp. Let's see if I can find it in here now. Companies that exited Russia are being rewarded with outsized stock market returns, Yale study finds, and those that stayed are not. This isn't what I'm actually trying to link to, but they changed the URL. Interesting. Okay, well, I'll have to come back to it, and I'll augment my show notes. The next article is over in the Lawnerd channel, law professor on the future of the First Amendment. I'm just going to click the link and take us over to AboveTheLaw.com. It's an article by Catherine Rubino. In the episode of the Jabot podcast, they speak with University of Buffalo law professor Samantha Barbas. They chat about her new book, The Rise and Fall of Morris Ernst, Free Speech Renegade, and about the First Amendment pioneer turned enemy of the civil rights. And they also discuss the future of the First Amendment and a recent right-wing push to remake the pillar of free speech doctrine enshrined in New York Times v. Sullivan. The Jabot podcast is an offshoot of Above the Law brand focused on challenges women, people of color, LGBTQIA, and other diverse populations face in the legal industry. And their names come from none other than the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the Jabot. Or Habit? Have I been pronouncing that wrong the whole time? Hold on a second. Wow. You know, forgive me, Jabot? That's interesting. Well, depending on where it's, depending on the pronunciation, depending on where you are, it's pronounced differently. So, wow. I am, you learn something new every day and you don't know what you don't know. So I didn't know that that's what that decorative collar was called. For whatever reason, if I had learned it, it slipped my mind. But there we go. Okay. So she wore when delivering dissents from the bench. It's a reminder that even when we aren't winning, we're still a powerful force to be reckoned with, what people are. I think everybody should be treated the the same as a human being, embrace diversity and difference between people, as long as they're making sense, as long as they're not lying, as long as they're not being manipulative, as long as they're not being a tool. I'm not concerned about the rest of it. You know, I embrace everybody as a human being first. Anyway, so I'm going to have to do a little digging because I'm feeling a little taken aback by not knowing about this. But I've found at least three different pronunciations of it. So now I need to know the definitive pronunciation of it. At any rate, the next article, and so just to be sure of what I'm saying here, you should go over to this article and listen to the podcast that is associated with this, Jabot, or Jabot, depending on your pronunciation. And it's over on pretty much, I think, anywhere you can get a podcast, it'll be there. And it's about the law professor on the future of the First Amendment with Samantha Barbas. Okay, so the next article is the best stock trading apps for 2022. I'm just going to click the link, and they go through a bunch of them. It's over at businessinsider.com, personal finance. Eric Rosenberg and Ricky Houston put this together, and they talk about the best stock trading apps. They describe who their expert panel is for the evaluation of these, and they list Charles Schwab, Thinkorswim Trading Platform, SoFi Active Invest, Vanguard, Fidelity, Interactive Brokers, and Ally Invest. And they're all above 4 out of 5 stars. And they talk about all of the trading, I guess the pick that they have for why they ended up on the list. But I'm not going to stick around too long with that. I'm going to continue on, because now that we're on the other side of the pandemic, that is COVID-19, now U.S. monkeypox cases have more than doubled over the last week to 20. That's what the CDC says. So let's click the link. It takes us over to CNBC, and they have a key points list. It says Dr. Jennifer McQuiston, a CDC official, said the overall health risk to the public remains low right now. With only 20, it doesn't seem that high. But you don't want to be the one that gets it. Just like COVID, you don't want to be the recipient of that prize. Most of the U.S. patients had a history of international travel, and it's likely that they caught the virus while abroad, but the virus could be spreading domestically. Most of the patients so far self-identify as men who have sex with men. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. The CDC said it's working with the LGBTQ community to raise awareness about the virus. Well, let's hope that it's quashed and nobody else falls victim to monkeypox. We could use a break as a species of, you know, human beings, right? We could probably not, but I put nothing past people. There will be something divisive right around the corner, it seems. People just can't get along. The next article is regarding the Amber Heard verdict. And this is where I might end up soapboxing for a little bit. So if you want to just end the video here, then so be it. But so there's a lot of people that are saying that there's all kinds of stuff going to be coming out of this because of the Amber Heard verdict. And this article says it was a travesty. Others will follow. Abuse victims now have another reason to fear coming forward. I don't think so. It's an opinion piece over at the New York Times by Michelle Goldberg. And it says the Amber Heard verdict was a travesty. Others will follow. The verdict in Johnny Depp's defamation lawsuit against his ex-wife Amber Heard is difficult to explain logically. Not really. I watched all of it and reviewed it periodically for areas where I got pulled away because I was working. And it says the confounding part isn't that the jury sided with him over her. This is the country that elected Donald Trump, where the convicted domestic abuser Chris Brown is still a major pop star, and where a man in Indiana recently won a local Republican primary while in prison awaiting trial for charges of murdering his wife. All of this is true. Can't argue with you about this. The explosion of defiant, desperate feminist energy that was the Me Too movement have now been smothered by an even fiercer reaction. Me Too was a movement of women telling their stories. Now that Heard has been destroyed for identifying as a survivor, other women will think twice. Now, I think based on the way that the verdict was found, I think that these two people in this court with this judge and this jury saw it for what it was. And in my particular perspective, I think that they ruled the right way, in part, because they're based on the evidence that I saw, which isn't everything. Okay. Not everything was disclosed to the public. There's all kinds of stuff that happens on the back end that isn't publicly disclosed. Not everything from end to end is always disclosed in a court case. And the UK trial is a completely different animal. And that got brought in for some reason, because there's a completely different context to this on the other side. But everybody should feel that they can bring, they shouldn't try and seek a civil case. They shouldn't try and seek a civil trial. They should go straight to the criminal side. That's what this was. This was a civil case about defamation that was framed in the context of, oh, it's not defamation because you are a wife beater. This had nothing to do about abuse, because abuse is a criminal case, not a civil case. The documentation that was provided, short of being a complete tool, Depp doesn't seem to have hit her, to struck her, to have done anything. And in 58 years, no other person has come forward saying the same. So it's really an anomaly that he was violent towards a person. He may be loud. He may be forceful. He may be aggressive. He may use horrible language and vent. And when he gets angry, he either leaves the room or slams cabinets or throws something against the wall. And a lot of people do that. A lot of people do that, but they don't, they're not a wife beater. They're not an abuser of their spouse, of their significant other, of anybody, right? That's not what he was doing. He was slamming things around, because out of all the times when something could have happened, there was never any video of actual abuse. It's just somebody being a complete jerk. Without a doubt, you know, you don't slam cabinets around and be angry. And if my wife were recording me, time and time again, I'd be more worried about the stability of my marriage anyway. Like, why are you recording me? Why are you taking pictures of me and sending it off to friends and family? But the argument was that it was so that he could remember that he did this thing, as if a person who is knockout drunk, on drugs, etc., doesn't realize that they are this way. Believe me, they know. Just like a person who is a victim of domestic violence knows, there's all kinds of stuff that they have to go through to not offend. And they don't incite people. They don't incite that person to abuse. And they certainly don't try and record it as regularly as it appeared in the trial. You know, there were numerous videos and pictures and whatnot, and Depp was even aware of it. Yeah, you're recording me again. You know, if I was in a relationship with somebody that was violent to me and I had the means, most domestic violence people, victims, I don't even like calling them victims because it just doesn't, in society, calling somebody a victim seems to not be adequate for what is really happening. It's not just victimization. It's so much more, but I can't really phrase it as anything other than that right now, I guess. But the most of the people who are domestic violence victims don't have the means to just get up and walk away. But this person did and never did. And the argument was that, well, she loved him. And if anybody did the things that they did, that she says that he did to her, and had the means to just walk away, love matters not. They were horrible things that she said. And so I think that the jury looked at all of this, heard this, and just didn't believe her, just did not believe her. And I'm sure on appeal, if they're allowed to bring in new evidence, I think unless something really miraculous happens, she's going to lose on appeal as well. But that's basically what's being said, that she will appeal. And it's not a First Amendment issue. You can't claim a First Amendment issue when you are defaming somebody. It's not a First Amendment issue when it is ultimately called out as a lie. It turns into a civil defamation case, and this is the result of it. Because it isn't about your First Amendment. You can't just say whatever you want about a person. It has to have some modicum of proof, or it is stated as opinion, and you're not impacting anybody with that opinion. You're making it abundantly clear. And how you're framing it is you're making it abundantly clear. And even that can be an issue, right? And anybody can bring somebody to court just by filing a court case. You can file a claim right now, you know, against anybody. But the First Amendment applies to the government. It doesn't apply to individuals. You can't just say whatever you want. The control is on the government, that they can't come after you for your statement. But if you make a statement about somebody and they feel that they're being defamed, then they can file a lawsuit against you. I'm concerned that the way that it's being framed in opinion letters is going to cool others from stepping forward, and it shouldn't. You should see this case for what it is, which is it was he said, she said, or she said, he said, and there wasn't enough evidence to support the claims that were being made, and it's a defamation case. It isn't a domestic violence case. That is criminal. But there is no criminal anything. There's no criminal finding in this. There's no charges. There was nothing that led to criminality. And therefore, it should be seen as a defamation case, not a domestic violence case. Please keep that in mind. Anybody who's listening to this, listen to this for what it is, which is my understanding, my observation. And what I see this is, you witnessed firsthand the way that she claimed things, the way that he claimed things, the evidence that was argued and presented never substantiated abuse directly upon her, because it wasn't there. You couldn't see it. It didn't have to happen immediately, but there was no evidence of it. It just, out of all the times where a picture could be taken or a video could be made, why wasn't this? I mean, if it happened so frequently, and it seemingly did, every time they went out, I mean, I would probably have my phone running 24/7 and recording everything, you know, if I was so motivated to stay after the first time. But, you know, if I abused my wife, or my wife abused me, or my significant other, whatever your situation is, if they abuse you, leave. There isn't enough love in the world that should make you take abuse. It shouldn't exist. There isn't enough out there. You might be able to make change, and good for you, but I would never suggest anybody who has been the victim of domestic violence should stay. You know? And that's it. So I think that this is a wrong take in this letter here, this opinion letter from Michelle Goldberg from NewYorkTimes.com. It's titled, "The Amber Heard Verdict Was a Travesty, Others Will Follow." And I don't agree. With that said, we are at the end of the show, and I always take us back to the front page. I click that little front page logo. I'm still working on the logo. I want to change the Hometown design to just a little icon. Anyway, I'm working on it. And there you go. Always something new, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, aggregated from news around the internet. Thanks for stopping by. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.